This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. In this Moneybox Live podcast, we're looking at the finances of becoming a foster carer. When a child can no longer remain in their home and with their family, they need a stable and nurturing environment. For nearly 70,000 children in the UK, that's in foster care.
Many young people, when they first go into foster care, it can be quite traumatic. I mean, I was a nice young person, but I had trauma issues.
Foster carers' main concern has to be the children they look after, but they're self-employed, so there are also financial considerations, from allowances and fees to tax returns and receipts.
These two young placements, they came in and they just literally had basically the clothes that they were wearing. So straight away we took them out and we just bought them a whole new wardrobe.
Foster carers are given an allowance to pay for clothes and food, but they're also usually paid fees on top to recognise their time and skills. Many of them give up work to foster full time. But those fees aren't fixed, and foster carers face a postcode lottery when it comes to what local authorities pay. That's according to figures given exclusively to Moneybox Live. The Fostering Network told us 60% of local authorities offer fees of less than £5 an hour based on a 40-hour week. And of course, caring for children can be a 24-hour-a-day role. So in this Moneybox Live podcast, we're talking about the finances of fostering. Our experts are standing by waiting for your questions. But first of all, let's hear from a foster carer based in Wales. I went to meet Alison in Wrexham in the home that she shares with two teenage boys. Hi, Alison.
Hello.
Thank you. So this just has the instant feel of a busy family home.
This is our lounge, living room. This is the dining room, or right at this moment in time, games room.
Games room, teenage boys, games
teenage
room.
Teenage boys, games room, exactly. And I'll just... Can we come in? Is that okay? This is the where the boys live. This is the boys' bedroom with their bunk beds.
What's that artwork on the wall?
Every time a foster placement comes to stay with me, I ask their permission for them to put the handprint on the canvas. So these are the foster placements that have agreed. The boys who are with me at the moment, they've put one there. I've had over 50 placements in my four, well, this is my fifth year, I've just started now. These two young placements, they came in and they just literally had basically the clothes that they were wearing. So straight away we took them out and we just bought them a whole new wardrobe.
Tell me why you're a foster carer.
I like helping young people see who they are. Every young person that comes across my door has been through a trauma of some description. And sometimes trauma, it can just define who a young person is. That's where you've come from. It's what you're struggling with at the moment, but we'll work together to walk through this.
Do you see this as a job, as a career?
Yes, which is why it's always been my aim to go from a full-time paid employment to full-time fostering. I've always wanted to do it. And I have, over the last 4 years in particular, struggled a little bit at times because I've been doing my paid job and doing fostering as well, and it got a bit too much.
What is it that changed?
Well, Wrexham, who I actually am a foster carer for, produced an amazing, fantastic pay package for foster carers.
Okay, so let's talk about the money, if you're comfortable with that. How much money do you get as a foster parent?
There are different age brackets, and you get a certain amount of money for each category, ranging from £220 to £260 a week. That's what we call the basic payment. But out of that, a little bit of that is clothing allowance, which has to be spent on clothes for the young person. It can be put away and saved until they grow, and then they need more clothes. Pocket money every week as well, which they have to have in their bank account with their own name in it when they're old enough. And the rest is what we call the maintenance payment, and that's to pay for everything else that you could possibly need for them. So that's the basic package.
So is the basic payment meant to be the cost of looking after those children? How much of that is meant to be for you, for your work and your time and your effort?
Well, the actual basic payment, I don't think that, this is just my own opinion, it didn't cover that. That's where I was stuck at when initially before this package came out. It was only the actual intermediate and the skills and the specialist skills payment. They're what made the difference because they're just for me. They're just per child. So if I've got two children in, I would then get £190 a week for each of them on top. And then you also get that an extra week's payment for their birthday, and you also get an extra week's payment for Christmas. So it's not a lot, but with my income, I wouldn't have been able to afford to buy presents for Christmas and birthdays for any placements I had. But with this, I do. And it makes me feel a lot, like I'm actually contributing. So what we're going to do for tea tonight then? What are you thinking about tea tonight? What do you fancy? Sausages? That's a good one. We all like sausage. Beans? You want beans. That's fine. Are we doing gravy or not? Yeah.
So, as a full-time foster carer, do you have a fixed income you can rely on?
No, this is the risk that you take, because at any time the placements can move on, which is a good thing. So what I try to do is try and build up savings to give me a buffer so that I can then fill the gaps. But at the moment, you just get paid for every night that a child is in a bed in your house. So when they leave the next day, that's it, payment stops.
So we're talking about the cold, hard numbers, but this is a very demanding role.
I mean, each placement comes with their own needs. And as we all know, trauma has triggers. And they can wake up fine one day and something will trigger a reaction. And then you go, I didn't see that coming this morning. But you just adapt. You just nurture them through what they need to be nurtured through.
Do you think foster carers get paid enough?
No.
Does anyone?
At the end of the day, it's a 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, but it's how long is a piece of string, and the government's only got a certain amount of budget, haven't they?
It's difficult, isn't it? Some people will be listening and thinking, it shouldn't be about the money, it should be about the children and looking after the children and having a vocation.
Yes, exactly, and it should indeed, but I'm on my own, so if I don't have the income coming in, I don't have a roof over my head, I don't have food on the table, I don't have the bills paid for, and that's not providing a welcoming, safe and nurturing environment to a young person who needs it after they've been through trauma.
Well, thank you so much to Alison for inviting us around, sharing that with us. And thank you, of course, to the boys for not minding me interrupting their video games. Listening to that are today's experts. I'm joined by Brenda Farrell, who's head of fostering at Barnardo's and joins me here in the studio. And also by Sarah Thomas, who's the chief executive of the Fostering Network charity. Good afternoon. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Thank you both for being with us. Sarah, we're a money programme. We are going to talk about the finances, and you've got some research out on that we're going to look at. But we can't lose sight, can we, of the children at the centre of this? And when a child has to leave their home and their family, that can be a hugely traumatic experience.
Yeah, it really is. And I think for listeners who might not know what fostering is, this is families in every community right across the UK who are taking in children and young people who can't live with their own family for whatever reason. They may have experienced lots of things in their formative years and they need a foster family to take them in and to raise them as if they were their own. And right now across the UK, there are over 70,000 children living in foster care, and we need a lot more.
Very interestingly, in fact, we've just had an email from somebody whose daughter went into foster care, and she's saying that how much she valued that and how important that was, that stability was to her child when she couldn't provide it. She says, if we want people to foster children in need, then we need to pay them more. Sarah, explain the pay. Explain how the finances are meant to work. So we heard Alison describing Wrexham's package. What's typical? What does a carer receive? What's for the child's maintenance? What could be considered pay?
Yes. So generally across the UK, we have allowances that are for the child. So that's known as the National Minimum Allowance, and they exist in all four nations. So right across the UK, they're different. And from a previous piece of work we did about a year ago, we know that how they're paid is very different as well. But they should have an allowance that is to cover the cost of caring for the child. And then also a fee. It's most commonly called a fee, and that would be the payment that was made to foster carers to recognise the time and commitment that they give to the role, because as you said earlier, many of them will give up work. Sometimes that is what the child needs.
Now, and to put into perspective the allowances, as an example, in England, a foster carer looking after a five-year-old would receive an allowance set by the government of around £9,700 a year. Sarah, we know this isn't about financial gain for a lot of carers. As Alison said, though, people do need to pay their bills as well. So tell me about your latest research that some carers are getting less than £5 an hour in fees if you worked it out based on a 40-hour week.
Yes, and it's a notional calculation, really, to give people an understanding, because there's no such thing as a 40-hour week for foster carers. It is a full-time role. Children do not go home at 5 p.m. They are your family, and as any family will know, there's no annual leave or breaks. That is how fostering works for these children. So our work that we do as a charity, last year we looked at the allowances and how they were paid, and this year we've looked at fees. And what we've discovered from the Freedom of Information request that we've sent across the UK is that there really is very high levels of inconsistency. There's some very low rates of fee, there's some very high rates of fee, and there is really a large postcode lottery that means that children living in those fostering families will experience that. They will feel the reality of what it is like living in a household where there may not be enough funding to support that family in the best way.
Mm. And your research was just local authorities, it wasn't agencies that also provide foster care. Now, we did ask the UK governments for a response on this, because it is a devolved issue. They all said they recognise how important foster carers are. Scotland and Wales told us they're reviewing their support packages. Northern Ireland said work is ongoing to develop consistent fees. And in England, the government told us foster carers should never be out of pocket. Brenda, we heard today that inflation is 2.2%. In the last few years, we've been through that period of really high inflation and the cost of living crisis. Did that put pressure on foster carers?
Most definitely. I know that carers have had to consider the expenses that they have to manage. But around that, in organisations and agencies that support foster carers, it's about the bigger picture as well. So we've mentioned already that foster carers are self-employed. And within that, foster carers are exempt up to about £19,300 in annual income, not to pay tax. Mm. And they also receive some tax benefits then in relation to when they have children placed with them over a year. It's also about the support and the training. And number of foster carers, for example, who have memberships of different organisations will get discounts in family activities, etc., and support and advice in relation to budgeting, pensions, and looking at how they continue to manage their budgets as best they can.
Well, we've had an email from Tracy, who's been fostering for 22 years. She says it's a vocation, but she says, after 20 years, I noticed that the fees had remained the same within a few pounds, despite inflation increasing. A rough calculation, she says, revealed 25% pay decrease in real terms every decade. Recent allowance increases adjusted that loss to around 12% per decade. Thank you so much. Loads of you getting in touch. We really appreciate your thoughts. Let's speak to another foster carer. Chris is in Anglesey and fosters through Bernardo's. Chris, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you very much for being with us. Now, you're a long-term fosterer. How did that come about?
Initially we took one of my daughter's friends in as an emergency foster placement. And my wife and I can't have children of our own, so we decided to go from there and go to an open foster evening with Bernardo's. And we decided, yes, that's what we'd like to do, so that's what we did. We went from there, went to Bernardo's evening and carried on from there.
And you jumped in at the deep end, didn't you? What was your first long-term placement?
Our first long-term placement, we were initially approved for one child and we ended up with three sisters.
Wow.
12-year-old, 6-year-old and a 22-month-old.
Wow. I mean,
so that was an eye-opener, and they came to us 4 days before Christmas.
I mean, There's a lot to talk about there. I mean, suddenly parenting three children must have been amazing, challenging. Was it financially challenging?
Yes, you know, we did. Bernardo's are very good. They did give us a fee, initial fee, to help get Christmas presents for the children. And, you know, Bernardo's been consistent in all the payments and stuff over the years as well. But yes, financially, it was very difficult because I had to give up work. Because I'm the full-time carer, my wife continues to work.
Mm.
It was a big loss financially, but, you know, that's not what we came into it for.
And those girls are still with you?
The youngest of the three is still with us, but we're still in touch with the other two as well, and we've just taken on the eldest's youngest son on a special guardianship.
Okay, so it's very much a long-term commitment for you.
Yeah.
You talked about getting some cash to help with Christmas presents when you got them a few days before Christmas. What about other costs? Things like, I don't know, taking the girls on holiday?
Oh, we have to fund that ourselves. Out of our allowance and what my wife earned. So it's something we try and budget and we try and pay throughout the year so that we can take the children away.
When it comes to fees, how do you feel about what we've been hearing, that the amounts vary depending on where you live?
I don't understand that. You know, I feel it should be level across the board throughout the country. Obviously, you know, that we could always do with more money, but, you know, it is a postcode lottery. A lot of places pay different amounts. For example, our eldest foster daughter, the initial one we took on, she is now a foster carer herself with pre-adoption babies, and she gets paid when she hasn't got children with her either by the local authority, whereas we, if we lose a child, we don't get paid until we get another child in placement.
Yes, and we were hearing...
There's a lot of inconsistencies.
Mm. And it's very hard to plan your finances around potentially having gaps. Tell me then, Chris, what, obviously you're not doing it for the money. What has this experience meant to you?
It's meant a lot to me. It's opened my eyes as to how traumatic some of these children's lives have been. And until you're actually fostering yourself or in the system, as it were, you've no idea. People have no idea what these children have been through. They're just seen, a lot of the time, just seen as problem children. Well, they're not, you know. They need stability and a loving home, which is what we try and give.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for telling us about your girls.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a lot there, isn't there? Brenda, carers, we've just heard, they're not classed as employees. They're self-employed usually. How do they have to set themselves up? What do they have to consider?
As part of the assessment and training and the planning and becoming a foster carer is an understanding of what that income will be. As we've heard, it's a fee and it's an allowance, and it's about budgeting. And as Chris has pointed out, that there are times you may not receive an income. So it's budgeting for when a child isn't with you and for holidays and for the longer term, whether it be, as I mentioned before, pensions, etc. And that's so important. And being self-employed, you know, we give guidance towards independent financial advice in relation to being able to look at health for health payments, benefits for that, so that they really understand the responsibility with being self-employed.
Sarah, some people might be put off fostering because of that need to be self-employed and having, as Brenda says, to think about their own pensions, their own tax returns, planning their finances around when a council or an agency actually needs them to have children in their home. Do you think that puts people off?
I think it does make it difficult for people to make a really informed decision to become a foster carer, and that's really what we're calling for. You know, we need this, the payments that are made on behalf of raising other people's children to be consistent and to be consistently good, and also to be able for people to make decisions to choose fostering over and above a different career or a different option of work, because that's what we need. There's not that many people that will think about caring for somebody else's child or going into a caring profession at all, and we need to make fostering as easy and as attractive as possible for people to be able to feel that they can do that.
Brenda, we heard from Chris, you know, he's having to budget to take the children with him on holiday. What about other incidental costs, the stuff that comes up with children, paying for music lessons, pocket money, all those incidental costs that come along with kids?
We have a minimum allowance that's set by each of the nation governments, and they're calculated based on that expenditure. How much does it cost to care for a 0 to 5 year old, etc.? And within that, they should cover those costs, like planning for school uniforms, school holidays, birthdays, and those incidental costs, as you say. And that's working with carers to help them understand that self-budget and management.
Mm. Yeah. And do foster carers have to show you how they've spent that money?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's a degree of trust. When you're part of a team with fostering, it is about working together and with trust. But it's helping to understand that on occasions receipts may be required, for example, there are exceptional circumstances. And for some children that do have a degree of expenditure, maybe health-related, they can access benefits related to that child's health needs, if that's applicable.
What about what we heard with Chris, suddenly getting three girls placed with him just before Christmas? Is it harder to place sibling groups?
It is encouraging. Members of the public, when they come forward, may not understand the need for the care for sibling groups. And that's part of the training and support, the helping them to be able to accommodate that within their family environment. And it is about that support and training and sometimes therapeutic interventions as well to help them understand, as we've heard, about the trauma they may have experienced. But the allowances cover the age range, but also the number of children within the care. And you talk about that emergency placement, children coming in. We will work with carers to ensure that if they don't have the facilities available, such as beds, cots, etc., we will work with them in advance. And that's part of their planning and the preparation, because there are occasions when children have to leave their birth families on an emergency and find alternative families.
Thank you. Now, of course, we've said throughout this is about the children at the heart of this story. In fact, Moneybox Live did a dedicated programme looking at care leaver finances just a few months ago. You can find that right now on BBC Sounds. This week, though, I spoke to Shelby about her time in care and what it was like leaving.
Like many young people, when they first go into foster care, it can be quite traumatic. I mean, I was a nice young person, but I had trauma issues.
Tell me then about being an older teenager. What kind of support was there available to you as a young person leaving home and trying to start out in life?
It was a bit difficult because I had everything kind of like provided for me. So that was something that was quite stable, unlike living at home. So being in care, luckily, I was in a stable environment. But then when I got my own place and I had to pay the rent, council tax, water rates, gas, electricity, and then the shopping, and then the internet, and then your phone bill, it all kind of adds up. And then because you think you can finally do what you want because you're 18.
Yes.
You end up having a load of good times and then you forget about your bills.
A lot of teenagers will have had that experience. Were you getting any support with learning those money skills, teaching you to budget, helping you understand what bills to pay when?
See, I understand maths. I actually liked maths in school. But what they don't teach you is the actual realistic side of it. And I think that's where... Why can't maths also include budgeting and finance skills? Because that's something we're actually going to need when we leave school.
What did not having those skills mean for you as you started out in adult life?
I actually got into a lot of debt. The most amount of debt that me and my partner combined were in was about $4,000. And that's now currently down to $700. So I've been paying it off over the last few years.
What's your situation now in terms of work or education or your plans?
Education. So I've actually just finished a business course.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm waiting to get my certificate. I'm currently in the process with my partner doing a business plan for a freeze-dried foods and sweets company.
So you're an entrepreneur. Essentially, you want to work for yourself, run your own business, and you even want to foster in the future. Tell me about that.
If I had a bigger place and once this business gets started and I'm financially stable, I may just foster. I haven't decided if it's going to be a foster to adopt or respite or even long-term or short-term foster care.
Why would it be important to you to become a foster carer?
Because I know what it's like to go into foster care, you feel ripped away from kind of like a world you already know, and you probably already learned that, stranger danger, and you're literally put with strangers. That can be kind of scary, but because I can relate to that and I can explain, I might be able to create a comfortable, loving environment. I believe I have a lot of love to give, regardless if it's my biological child or somebody else's.
And do you think that at the heart of good foster care is that love for the children?
100%. Like, you can't go into this job for the money because you're never going to be satisfied. It's the love and rewards that you receive from seeing someone thrive from a negative environment to a positive environment, to see them grow as a person.
Shelby there, speaking just so honestly, so frankly, showing what foster care can mean. Thank you so much to her for that. We're getting loads and loads of emails in on this. Sarah Alex says, kinship care is something we considered, but in the end could not financially manage to do for children of a friend. The financial support is minimal for these situations compared to fostering. Do the experts have advice for people in situations like this? Sarah, there's not as much support for a lot of these people.
Yeah, kinship care is a category of foster care where the person is related to or connected to the child in some way. So local authorities, when children become looked after, they will always try and look for family members first, and then they go into what's known as mainstream foster cares if they can't find a kinship carer. And the rules from what we've discovered, the findings from what we've discovered in our research is that they can be very different in the way that they treat kinship foster carers and mainstream foster carers. So very different payments being made to them, different levels of fees, and even greater inconsistency, which shouldn't be the case, because if someone is approved as a foster carer, then they should be receiving the same level of fees and allowances for the children, because these are the same. It's the same child going into a different type of fostering provision.
And we've had a number of emails from people who were asked to do that kind of care for a child they were connected to. Brenda, we've had a message from Eddie who says, I've seen council adverts for fostering saying how much you can earn. That's targeting the wrong people who just want the wage, not those feeling they have something to offer. I mean, we've heard from a lot of people who obviously don't see this as simply a job, but presumably there are some people who see this simply as a way of earning an income.
And I think more so as we come out of COVID and to the cost of living crisis, people have to consider the impact on their own income and budgets when they're considering fostering. So those adverts, I think, are trying to assure people that there is a financial recompense and a recognition of financial support, which would number of people would exclude themselves, self-exclude on the basis we can't foster because we couldn't afford it.
Brenda, give us a sense then of why fostering is so worthwhile, why people should consider it.
I think Shelby summed it up beautifully. She used the word about love, stability and security. And my observation, my years of fostering with Bernardo's has been, it is about changing childhoods and changing lives.
And Sarah, if anyone's considering fostering, they know they need more information, where can they get that?
I would recommend the best place to go is to our website. That's the fosternetwork.org.uk. There's a wealth of information there about all sorts of questions you might have and to find answers to those questions, but also telephone numbers for our advice teams across the UK, where you can actually speak to an advisor and ask anything that you want to know about fostering and find those answers to help you make the decision.
Well, we've had a message from someone who hasn't given their name who says, I've fostered for over 20 years. I would recommend fostering as the joys far outweigh the monetary reward. We have struggled financially, but worked through it. Our fostering has brought us heartache and joy. We wouldn't change a thing. It's such an important topic. Thank you to Alison, Chris and Shelby for talking to me. And thank you to our experts. In this Moneybox Live podcast, we've been hearing from Brenda Farrell, head of fostering at Bernardo's, and Sarah Thomas, chief executive of the Fostering Network charity. If there's a story that you would like us to cover, then please do get in touch. The address is moneybox@bbc.co.uk. Leave a phone number if you can. In this podcast, the producer was Sarah Rogers, studio manager Alex Charles. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
I was definitely too young when I was leader of the opposition, not to do many of the other jobs I did in government.
Admissions and insights from the people who shape how we think.
I would say my family, well, gave myself and my two siblings a critical eye.
And because it's not just politicians who mould our lives, we also hear from economists, comedians and best-selling authors.
It's the fastest way to change things. You do need politics, but if you want to change something overnight, culture is the quickest way to do it.
Conversations, not newsy interrogations. That's Political Thinking with me, Nick Robinson, from BBC Radio 4. Listen now on BBC Sounds.